This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama and the Finance Capitalists, on the same page. Ted Rawl wrote an article for the UPI syndication circuit that we saw in the State Journal Register coming out of Springfield, Illinois, which is the oldest newspaper in Illinois. It's available on sj-r.com. I refer to this article because sometimes articles appear that just encapsulate everything, that synthesize all the information. And we're going to start our Taking Aim show today, Barack Obama and the Finance Capitalists, on the same page, with this article, reading it in full. Ted Rawl writes, "Obama doesn't talk like Bush. He just acts like him." Coming from New York, posted March 20th, 2009. It begins, "You can't blame Dick Cheney for being annoyed at Barack Obama. Obama is closing Guantanamo. He's ordering the CIA to interrogate prisoners according to the rules written in the Army Field Manual, which doesn't allow torture. He's even phasing out such classic Bushian phrases as, quote, enemy combatant and, quote, war on terror, end quote. But the dark prince of neoconservatism," referring to Dick Cheney, "should relax. Obama's inaugural address may have promised to, quote, reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals, end quote. But in all ways that matter, he's keeping all of Bush's outrageous policies in place. Sure, he talks a good game about moving forward, but nothing has really changed. From reading your emails to asserting the right to assassinate American citizens to bailing out companies whose executives pay themselves big bonuses, Obama's changes are nothing but toothless rhetoric. Closing Gitmo, reported the New York Times, was merely, quote, a move that seemed intended to symbolically separate the new administration from Bush detention policies. But in a much-anticipated court filing, the Justice Department argued that the president has the authority to detain terrorism suspects there without criminal charges, much as the Bush administration had asserted. It provided a broad definition of those who can be held, which was not significantly different from the one used by the Bush administration," end quote, from the quote from the New York Times. What will happen to the 241 POWs still at Gitmo? They won't be enemy combatants anymore, but most won't be going home. Quote, "The filing signaled that as long as Guantanamo remains open, the new administration will aggressively defend its ability to hold some detainees there," wrote the Times. "Where will they go after that? Welcome to Gitmo 2, courtesy of Barack Obama." Ralph?
Countless victims have been tortured by U.S. military personnel at Bagram, the U.S. air base in Afghanistan, where Bush imprisoned 600 people without charges. These, of course, are the official numbers. We know they're huge magnitudes higher. Some were murdered in the camp's notorious salt pit. Quote, "Even children have not been spared," unquote, stated Amnesty International. Now Bagram is being expanded, nearly doubled in size, in order to accommodate 200-plus detainees from Guantanamo, as well as future prisoners of wars from Obama's expanded war against Afghanistan. As bad as Guantanamo was, conditions at Bagram are worse. Extraordinary renditions, the Times reports in a different article, will continue under Obama. Quote, "In little-noticed confirmation testimony recently," states the New York Times, "Obama nominees endorsed continuing the CIA's program of transferring prisoners to other countries without legal rights and indefinitely detaining terrorism suspects without trials, even if they were arrested far from any war zone," unquote. During the 2008 campaign, Obama's critics accused him of saying nothing, albeit beautifully. Now that we've gotten to know him a bit, it's time to refine that assessment. He's just a weasel. an eloquent weasel, but a weasel who says the right things while doing the opposite. On March 9th, Obama ordered federal agencies to suspend Bush's famous signing statements, sneaky documents issued after the signing of a bill that ordered government agencies not to enforce the very same bill he just approved in front of the cameras. Signing statement says the American Bar Association used one-man dictatorial rule to negate the people's will as expressed by Congress and are thus contrary to the rule of law and our constitutional separation of powers, quote. Yet 2 days later, literally, Obama signed a $410 billion spending bill and appended to it a signing statement claiming he had the constitutional authority to ignore its oversight provisions, writes Glenn Greenwald of Slate. Greenwald regrets having to quote Rich Lowry of the right-wing National Review, so do I, but the right is right sometimes, quote, Barack Obama has perfected a three-step maneuver that could never even be attempted by a politician lacking his rhetorical skill or cool cynicism. First, denounce your presidential predecessor for a given policy, energizing the party's base and capitalizing on his abiding unpopularity. Second, pretend to have reversed that policy upon taking office with a symbolic act or high-profile statement. And third, adopt a version of that same policy, knowing it's the only way to govern responsibly or believing that doing otherwise is too difficult, unquote.
This week's example is Obama's grandstanding over $165 million in bonuses paid to executives of AIG, which received billions in federal bailout money. He feigned outrage, quote, how do they justify this outrage to the taxpayers who are keeping the company afloat, end quote. But his Treasury Department knew about the bonuses, which roughly amount to 55 cents per American ages ago. He also knew there isn't much the government can do legally to claw the money back. Unlike the word count limit of this column, Obama's perfidy knows no limits. He's already become more dangerous to democracy and basic human rights than George W. Bush. Unlike Bush, he has no political opposition. Cheney may nitpick, but most Republicans are happy to see Bush's policies remain in place. Meanwhile, liberals remain loyal, silent, and tacitly pro-torture. Ted Rawl is a columnist for UPI, and you can see this online on sj-r.com, which is the State Journal Register, the newspaper of Springfield, Illinois. Today on Taking Aim, we're going to address another of Obama's perfidies, something we've discussed before, and we're going to go into much more detail because of the events of the last week, and that is bailing out the finance capitalists at the cost to you and me. But first, let's look at the Washington Post from February 8, 2009, saving the banks. The most important steps of the administration's recovery plan are still to come. And that's what they said in February. But in March, that is what happened. Saving the banks, and not just the banks, saving the hedge funds, the highly speculative adventures of the multimillionaires and billionaires and the investment houses. As the Washington Post wrote back last month, quote, the basic problem is this. America's financial institutions remain burdened with the toxic assets, instruments often of mind-blowing complexity for which the market has collapsed. Goldman Sachs says that about $1 trillion in illiquid securities still haunts the bank's balance sheets. The resulting paper losses are eating away at the bank's capital, and without a stable capital cushion, banks do not dare lend money, even to creditworthy customers. As long as the toxic assets remain, private capital will shun the banks, and the government capital will get eaten up by more and more losses. One way or another, this corrosive uncertainty must end. The Washington Post, the spokesperson of finance capital and the ruling class, says, bail out the banks, take away their toxic assets. And that's what Obama said he would do, and that's what Geithner proposed before Congress, and that's what is happening. Ralph, let's discuss the meeting that Barack Obama had with the bank executives.
Well, the Dow Jones Newswire gives what they call a second update with the headline, Bank Executives Pleased with Tone of Meeting with Obama, this on the 29th of March, by Henry Polizzi and Jessica Holzer. Chief executives of the nation's largest financial institutions emerged from a meeting with U.S. President Barack Obama Friday, pledging to cooperate with the White House's effort to steer the economy out of its mess. Executives said the tone of the more than 90-minute session was open, with both sides looking to move beyond divisive rhetoric. We're just in this together. There's hard work to do, but it's a pleasant meeting, said Bank of America Corporation CEO Ken Lewis. The White House spokesman Robert Gibbs called the get-together a good, productive, and frank conversation. The participants said the meeting was free of drama. Obama acknowledged the past few weeks had been rough for the banks, but made clear that the public is angry over excessive compensation, and he asked the industry to help him rein in the issue. The CEOs agreed they had to make clear that they understood the public's concern over taxpayer-funded bailouts, according to Freddie Mac CEO John Koskinen. The executives, however, said the government programs need firm rules that don't change with the political winds. Whatever the rules are going to be, we need to know them sooner than later because we're prepared to play by requirements, but we need to know what they're going to be.
Well, Ralph, this is a bit disingenuous because the requirements are being crafted by the bankers themselves. Because what happened in this meeting on Friday the 27th was great news for the banks. That's what Geithner is all about, coming from finance capital himself. Rack up bad debts. That's what they have done. And now the government is going to take them off your hand. There were 15 executives at this meeting with Barack Obama. And by the way, they had met the night before with Timothy Geithner to prepare them for this 90-minute session. 15 executives, 13 of them CEOs of the most significant financial institutions, and two of them were lobbyists. There was J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon, Bank of America's Ken Lewis, American Express CEO Ken Chenault, Freddie Mac's Koskinen, State Street Corporation CEO Ronald Logue, Bonnie Mellon's Kelly, Northern Trust Corporation's Rick Waddell, PNC Financial Services Group CEO James Rohr, Goldman Sachs Group CEO Lloyd Blankfein, Morgan Stanley CEO John Mack, Citigroup's Vikram Pandit, and from Wells Fargo, John Stumpf, and last but not least, U.S. Bancorp's Davis. U.S. Bancorp has been taking over many of the smaller banks, such as Downey Savings, which originally was Home Savings, a big mortgager that the FDIC took over. Ralph?
Well, it's spelled out by all of the major news media for the ruling class. MSNBC bank CEOs will work with Obama on crisis. Top executives of the nation's biggest banks said after meeting with Barack Obama, they will work with the administration on its recovery plans. The bankers said an administration proposal to jumpstart lending is encouraging. People are looking at that. It's positive. We think it's the right thing to do. The administration denounced its program to help the banks free themselves of so-called toxic assets. These investments have tied up capital and kept them from resuming more lending, normal lending to consumers and so on, they continue. But what they've got going for them is a complete bailout, a total subsidization of the very banks that have ripped off everybody. And every one of these pieces clarifies that. CNBC's Power Lunch here on the 27th of March. And CNBC quotes a number of the participants rather revealingly. Aaron Burnett, you're closer to me, John. Let's start with you. Any tension? How would you describe the meeting? No tension at all. It's about close cooperation. We have plans in place through the Secretary Geithner's plan, how the banks are doing on lending. It's about getting the economy going, and the banks are taking a crucial role in making sure that happens. There were issues we worked on in the sense that the right framework, which we talked about briefly, we'll work it out together. It was very encouraging. And then they asked Mr. Blankfein. He went around the table and asked everyone, What did you choose to talk about? And Lloyd Blankfein, Goldman Sachs, everyone was on the same page. We wanted the president to understand, and he did, that we recognize that our interests are aligned if the economy does well. And, I mean, there's a big lesson out there. You can't distinguish Main Street and Wall Street. We need a good economy for our businesses, and we know that Main Street needs the banks to lend and participate. And he goes on. This is a very detailed elaboration of how each of these executives specifies how the banks will take the lead, the government will give them the backing, and the bottom line is that there will be no restraint and no restriction on facilitating the banks further profiteering off their original boondoggle projects with fictive capital. Here, Don Miller, in the associate editor of the Investment News Money Morning, White House Men's Fences with Wall Street, John Stumpf, chief executive officer of Wells Fargo. We're all in this together. Barack Obama convened a who's who of executives from the largest banks to mend fences with Wall Street and to drum up their support for his plans to stabilize the financial system.
Ralph, the most telling, the most precious of the comments was what John Stumpf later added. Quote, "We're trying to do the right thing for America." Now, who is going to believe this? "We're trying to do the right thing for America," says the chief executive of Wells Fargo and Company. Ralph?
Well, in the article by Joe Kishore on the 28th of March entitled "Obama Holds a Very Pleasant Meeting with the Top U.S. Bankers," it gets spelled out. Barack Obama met behind closed doors for an hour and a half with the chief executives of the largest American banks and reassured the titans of finance that his administration has their best interests at heart. According to White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, the meeting's agenda included Obama administration's toxic asset purchase program, proposals for regulating executive compensation in the financial industry. That is to say, every aspect of the administration's economic policy caters to the interests of the financial elite, of which this president is a mouthpiece. The private meeting at the White House had the air of a conspiracy against the public, a gathering to discuss carving up state resources and handing them over to the banks and the major investors. Among those attending, the 13 CEOs and two banking industrial lobbyists gathering at the White House, standing at the helm of companies that control most of American finance, the same people who played the most decisive role in driving the speculative orgy on Wall Street that has now collapsed, the same collapse that precipitated the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression. Here's Ken Lewis, CEO of Bank of America. "We're just in this together. A very pleasant meeting." Lewis added, "On executive bonuses, I got the impression from Obama that the things that are going on behind the scenes don't really reveal that cooler heads will prevail and nothing will be done that is punitive," unquote. Vikram Pandit, Citicorp, "We have a common goal for building momentum. It was a good constructive meeting. Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan on the bonuses question. Obama is clear that he is not against wealth. He would like to see some self-restraint as opposed to government regulation." Robert Kelly, New York Mellon Corporation, on the toxic asset program detailed by Secretary of Treasury Tim Geithner. "We think it's really encouraging to get this plan out there. We are very much aligned with this administration." John Kosekegan of Freddie Mac, "No one in the room gave any indication at all that they were anything other than enthusiastic about the president and his program for the banks and the economy." John Mack of Morgan Stanley, "This was all about cooperation. The banks will take the crucial role in making that happen. We're all working together. Banks in the lead. It's very encouraging." Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, "We're all on the same page. What we really want, and the president understood, is that we recognize that our interests are aligned with that of the government, and we only do well when our economy does well." White House spokesman Robert Gibbs, "Obama was very pleased with the outcome and would keep his close lines of communication open with the bankers." Top Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett, who participated in the meeting with the bankers, we're reliant upon them. It would be very unnatural if we didn't engage them and have the direct opportunity to pick their brains for a look to the future. This is the quote from his top advisor. The bankers, the article tells us, have every reason to be happy. The Obama administration has enacted a series of measures tailored to serve the interests of the financial oligarchy. Mayim?
Yes, Ralph. And Wall Street responded. Wall Street went up 20%. And why? 20%. The stocks of the banks went up. But jobs were not created. There is more unemployment than has existed for over 20 years. The unemployment rate keeps going up. Jobs aren't created. There's no real change in the economy. But the government has sent out the signal, we're not going to let the banks fail. As the Washington Post on March 23rd, Neil Irwin noted, Treasury unveils details of plan to relieve banks of toxic assets. Toxic assets means the failing loans. The Public-Private Investment Plan, as it's called by Timothy Geithner, detailed this morning a long-awaited but risky piece, notes the Washington Post, of the government's financial stabilization strategy will pour government money into private investment funds as a way to move loans from the balance sheets of the banks to those of long-term investors. The Washington Post isn't saying up front in what is revealed later and will be revealed further during this Taking Aim program is that basically all the losses are going to the federal government. It's heads, the investors win, tails, the U.S. public loses. Ralph?
Well, look, the dialogue with the Wall Street bankers was very, very explicit. Indeed, what's going on here is that the tax bonuses to the executives of AIG and other companies will receive significant government aid. 90% of all of the toxic losses of the banks will be subsidized by the U.S. government. The Wall Street bankers are also making clear that they will not tolerate any threat to their personal bank accounts. And now Obama has indicated his opposition to any House plan to limit the bonuses or the compensation for the executives. And the House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer stated on Wednesday that legislation will not be necessary. And Majority Leader Harry Reid said the Senate will not take up any legislation. On Monday, Geithner, who participated in the meeting with the bankers, released details of the White House plan for toxic assets. Massive government subsidy for private investors to buy up the worthless assets on the balance sheets of the banks. The investors will fund these purchases with cheap government loans and will be themselves guaranteed against any losses and will benefit from any profits. They are completely subsidized, they're immunized against any loss, and they're guaranteed profit at taxpayer expense. The plan will benefit the bankers and the hedge funds. And it's just the latest, but not the last, of the bank bailout schemes initiated by the Bush administration and accelerated under Obama. And as this article states that I was citing here by Joe Kishore, upwards of $10 trillion, get this, brothers and sisters, upwards of $10 trillion will be handed over to the banking institutions. And Obama stated, quote, the rest of us can't afford to demonize investors or entrepreneurs who seek to make a profit. That drive is what has always fueled our prosperity, and it is ultimately these banks that will get the economy moving once again. And the administration not only works with Wall Street to make the banks and the personal portfolios of bankers their central obligation, but simultaneously, Obama is preparing a massive attack on the working class. During the very press conference, which is elucidating how something in the order of $10 trillion are going to be handed over to these banker gangsters, Obama stressed that his determination to, quote, tackle high health costs and to implement what he called entitlement reform means cuts in Social Security, cuts in Medicare, and cuts in Medicaid. And any restrictions on executive bonuses has been dropped. Obama stated that his insistence that any aid to the auto industry will have to be conditioned on job and wage cuts from the auto workers. He said the auto industry will make some pretty drastic changes, and some of these are going to be painful. You know what that painful change is, brothers and sisters? Accepting non-union wages for the workers, abandoning their own health care plan, and furthermore allowing workers to be fired, every worker that has a salary or a benefit that is exceeding those of non-union workers is for the chopping block. The policy of this administration is to ensure that what they call the pain is borne exclusively by the working class, while the looting of public assets by the financial bankers and gangsters proceeds apace.
Ralph, I'd like to get to the specific plan, the Obama administration plan for toxic assets. In the few minutes before the station ID, we'll introduce it. And an important article in the World Socialist website by Barry Gray on March 23rd is a wonderful synopsis. This, along with the article that appeared in the Washington Post by Neil Irwin, to which I referred before. And basically, the FDIC, the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation, which is the guarantor of your money in the bank, is now going to become the guarantor for wealthy investors. Let's look at this report. Remember, we're facing the deepest economic crisis since the 1930s. And people in the know say the major banks would be failing and should be nationalized. But nationalized is not the intent of this administration. This administration is there to prop up the wealth of the ruling class, maintaining it in their own hands. And this crisis was caused by the speculation on high-risk investments instead of putting money into productive forces. These are speculative investments that generate extraordinary returns and sustain the multi-million-dollar pay packages of the Wall Street CEOs. There are three major components, all of which involve the use of taxpayer money to guarantee large profits for hedge funds. These are the unregulated, highly speculative funds, private equity firms, and insurance companies such as AIG, who agreed to use low-cost government loans to purchase virtually worthless mortgage loans and securities, what they call the toxic assets. These are the subprime mortgages that have been ganged up into securities that are weighing down the balance sheets of the bank. What do we mean by the involvement of the federal government? The plan is for the government to put up 97% of the cash to carry out the purchases and to agree to absorb 75% or more of any losses that might result from the deals. At the same time, the government is expanding a Federal Reserve program that was launched last week to revive the dormant market in asset-backed securities, otherwise known as the shadow banking system, that enables the Wall Street billionaires to participate in the scheme to eventually repackage and resell all these bad debts, taking them off the hands of the banks at a substantial profit. Think about what this is. Does any of this ever happen to you or me? No. The rich get richer and the government bails them out.
Well, the consequence of this, as we'll discuss both later in this show and in our show next week, is that they are basically looting while they can loot and guaranteeing that the degree of deficit financing and the destruction, the incremental vast increase in the debt-based operations of this economy not only are destroying the dollar, they just print more money and hand it over to the banks. the consequence for the other economies in China and the European Union is going to be catastrophic. With the rebound in the United States, we're going to see a collapse, brothers and sisters, on a scale that dwarfs what we're witnessing now, because they're doing the same thing on steroids. The banks, according to this plan, will not only offload all their failed investments at public expense, but they will profit handsomely from the resulting rise in the price of their banker stocks. That's what's gone on just now. The largest rise in a given month in, what is it, something like 25 years for the bank stocks that are, in fact, based upon fictive capital, the boondoggle that everybody has exposed as extrapolation of value with no collateral base, the derivative-based fraud, which is sinking this capitalist economy in a hopeless morass of toxic deficit and debt economics that are based on nothing. It's a Ponzi scheme that is made off on steroids.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama and the Finance Capitalists on the Same Page. Ralph?
Well, Geithner is going to announce the creation
He's announced it.
A new government entity called the Public Investment Corporation to oversee the bailout. It'll be backed by $100 billion, which isn't even allocated from the $700 billion troubled asset relief program that Bush put forward and was authorized by the Democratic-controlled Congress in October last. Geithner will not directly request additional bailout funding because of the eruption of public anger over the $165 million in bonuses, but the administration has allocated, and this is one of their sneak attack allocations, an additional $750 billion in bank bailout funds called placeholders. And they put it, they secreted it in the budget they put forward last month. The first prong of this will involve the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which was created in the 30s to insure the savings of ordinary bank depositors, but what this FDIC is doing is establishing a partnership with the hedge funds and the private investment firms to buy up the whole home loans as distinct from loans that were packaged in what they called mortgage-backed securities, and that in turn will be the subsidization of these toxic asset purchases, guaranteeing profiteering off them and subsidizing them against any losses which the taxpayers will put up. The New York Times spelled it out that this will be a non-recourse loan secured by the value of the home loans bought, worth up to 85% of the value of the portfolio of a troubled bank asset. The remaining 15% of the cost, the use of public funds will cover 80%, leaving the investment firms to contribute as little as 3% of the total cost. And the interest rate it collects on the loans to the firms as well will be far below current market rates. This is the most naked handover and subsidy to the very gangster bankers who have ripped everybody off and triggered this crisis of another round of vast profiteering based upon the toxic assets that they themselves are responsible for creating. This is
Ralph, it's very important to note that they're transforming the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, which guarantees the bank accounts of individuals up to $100,000. It's now been increased to a little more than that. That is what guarantees your deposit. This was a result of the Depression era, wherein people lost all their savings. So the federal government became the deposit, the insurer of bank deposits. However, now the FDIC will be buying loans, not just insuring the deposits. It's going into partnership with these hedge funds, with the speculative investment of these troubled bank assets. And in terms of creating money, not only is this sneak attack of the $750 billion, the Fed, U.S. Federal Reserve Board, announced last Wednesday that it's going to expand its pump liquidity of the near-frozen credit market by two plans, one to purchase $300 billion in longer-term securities over the next 6 months, and an additional $750 in Fed purchases of the mortgage-backed securities of the federally owned Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. This is absolutely incredible. It means the Fed is pumping in $1.15 trillion into the U.S. system, essentially printing money. And this has been causing a sell-off of dollars. The value of the dollar fell. So back now, Ralph, to the public-private investment.
Well, let me just make this point. What's really going here on here is that, as I indicated, they're subsidizing the bankers and the private investors. And they'll bid against each other in auctions for home loans and securities offered for sale, and the government will claim that markets are setting the price, but it's a fraud. They're paying investors to buy the bank's junk assets, insuring them against losses. The government creates conditions where the buyers will be willing to pay outlandishly high prices, so the banks themselves will receive multiples of the real market value of the very assets that they are offloading. This is what caused Paul Krugman, the liberal economist, to characterize the scheme aptly in an article he published on Saturday. Quote, in effect, the Treasury is creating deliberately the functional equivalent of the Texas saving and loan scandals of the 1980s. The financial operations with little capital, very little capital, but government-guaranteed liability. For the private investors, this is an open invitation to play heads, I win. Tails, the taxpayer loses. These investors will be ready to pay high prices for toxic waste. After all, the stuff might be worth something, and if it isn't, it's someone else's problem, because they're guaranteed the profit and they're subsidized against loss. That's the statement by Paul Krugman. The second and more fundamental reason goes to the class character of this administration and the reality of the class relations in the United States. This is decades of financial parasitism, aided and abetted by every successive administration, Democratic and Republican, which have transformed the ruling class into a financial aristocracy. It exercises total, overwhelming, and unchecked power over the state. The government that functions is the open instrument of this minuscule little oligarchy, and they are now presenting such flagrant schemes to plunder the resources, use the crisis of the financial aristocracy's own making to further enrich them at the expense of the population. Who is Geithner? The former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the key architect of the Bush administration bailout, who announced the new administration's bailout plan as he was being exited by Bush's administration, the Dow Industrial Average plummeting 380 points because he was deemed to have provided insufficient guarantees for the wealth and power of the banks and Wall Street firms. Now, under Obama, he is compensating for this and guaranteeing what the Wall Street bankers demanded. He was elevated by Obama to the most powerful section of finance capital as the front man for the bankers. His top economic advisors have been involved in talks with the masters of Wall Street to make sure that whatever they do meets with the banker's satisfaction. Here's how the Washington Post reported it. The richest and most powerful figures in Wall Street are the real authors of the administration's plan, the Washington Post noted. Last fall, billionaire investor Warren Buffett, Goldman Sachs chief executive Lloyd Blankfein, and William Gross, the managing director of PIMCO, the largest bond fund in the world, approached the Treasury with an idea to create the investment fund using public and private funds to buy the toxic assets from the banks, according to former senior Treasury officials, unquote. The utter slavish servility of Obama and his administrative flunkies to Wall Street was in full exhibition on the Sunday television talk shows. The administration spokesmen were begging the banks and the hedge funds not to allow their own banker anger over moves to limit executive bonuses to dissuade them from sanctioning the government's new bailout scheme. This is Christina Romer, chairman of the White House Council on Economic Advisers, when she went on Fox News. The administration would assure Wall Street that no firms that participated in this plan will face any limits on executive pay. What we're talking about here, she said, are private firms that are kind of doing us a favor. coming into this market to help us buy toxic assets off the bank's balance sheets. And they understand that the president realizes that they're in a different category. These are now the good guys here, says she, referring to the banker gangster operatives who are plundering us once again.
Ralph, Barack Obama, in his press briefing, confirmed his goal is to save Wall Street. He stated, "We're going to do what's necessary to protect the system." What does he mean by the system? The capitalist ruling class, the private ownership of the means of production, and the wealth of the few. Obama, in his remarks to the press on the toxic asset plan, affirmed, quote, that it will involve market participants who have every interest in making a profit. What is this profit? They not only benefit from the rise in the value of these toxic assets, which the government bears any potential for loss, but also they're going to receive lucrative fees for dividing up the booty. That is, for creating this, because it's going to be a private market that the FDIC and the other organs of the U.S. Treasury will fund. But this is not accepted by the New Deal Democrats, as Ralph has mentioned, Paul Krugman and Robert Reich also. And then we hear from Jeffrey Sachs. Jeffrey Sachs, who was notorious for what he did for the IMF and the povertization, the pauperization of the underdeveloped countries. But Jeffrey Sachs wrote in the Huffington Post, Geithner and Summers, referring to Lawrence Summers, the director of the White House National Economic Council, have now announced their plan to raid the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Federal Reserve to subsidize investors to buy toxic assets from the banks at inflated prices. If carried out, Sachs notes, the result will be a massive transfer of wealth of perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars to bank shareholders from the taxpayers, who, he notes, will absorb any losses at the FDIC and the Fed. The investment funds will have the following balance sheet. For every dollar of toxic assets that they buy from the banks, the FDIC will lend up to 85.7 cents. That's 6/7 of a dollar. And the Treasury and the private investors will put in 7.15 cents in equity to cover the remaining balance. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation loans will be non-recourse, meaning that if the toxic assets purchased by the private investors fall in value below the amount of the FDIC loans, which I'll note will happen if there's foreclosures, the investment funds will default on the loans and the FDIC will end up holding the toxic assets. Again, as Ralph mentioned, Sachs, as others have said, as Krugman and others have said, the FDIC is giving a heads-you-win, tails-the-taxpayer-loses offer to the private investors. Ralph?
Last September, September 22, 2008, Paul Krugman wrote an article called Cash for Trash. He said skeptics are calling Henry Paulson's $700 billion bailout for the U.S. financial system cash for trash. Others are calling it the authorization for use of financial force after the authorization for use of military force that gave the Bush administration the green light to invade Iraq. There's justice in these jibes. Mr. Paulson is demanding extraordinary power for himself to deploy the taxpayers' money on behalf of a plan that doesn't make sense. Now, this article in last September goes through the entire cynical operation for subsidizing and bailing out, not with billions but trillions of dollars, the bankers who are at the heart of the looting of the entire society. Now on March 28, 2009, Louise Story gives us a little insight into what goes on in these quarters. Quote, Goldman bailed out two executives. The financial giant Goldman Sachs spent tens of millions of dollars to bail out two senior executives short on cash, according to the bank's proxy statement filed on Friday. In an unusual move, Goldman brought back stakes in internal investment funds from John Winkelried, the bank's co-chief operating officer, and Gregory Palm, its general counsel. Both executives are amongst the largest shareholders in the bank, owning more than a million shares each. And directors are concerned that a large sale of Goldman shares by the two men would alarm investors during this period of market turmoil. So Goldman paid Mr. Winkelried $19.7 million to purchase 30% of his investments in internal hedge funds and private equity investments, and they paid another $38.3 million personally to Mr. Palm for a quarter of his investments, and then the bank aided the two executives, and Warren Buffett, the chief advisor to Obama, invested $5 billion in Goldman, and the bank's top four executives agreed not to sell more than 10% of their stock for 4 years. This is the biggest fraud and open naked theft of money since the Teapot Dome scandal. In your face, Goldman bails out the executives while they are reaping the extraordinary handout. This is how it's described by Rolf Winker, chief financial officer, and who publishes something called Option Armageddon, ARM, the variable rate mortgages. And the headline of this piece is Big Banks Pull Off the Ultimate Bait and Switch. We're not quite as healthy as we thought we were. Oops, Wall Street Journal. J.P. Morgan Chief Executive James Dimon said March was a little tougher than the first 2 months of the year. Bank of America CEO Kenneth Lewis said March was a little tougher month for the bank. They decided to dump this information on Friday afternoon, and then we readers will recall the two CEOs, along with Citibank's Vikram Pandit, said the first 2 months of the year had been very good. And what does this all add up to? They deploy all this to obtain another huge rapine subsidy and guarantee of profiteering on the toxic assets themselves.
Ralph, this is an important article by Rolf Winkler, because what he noted is while the J.P. Morgan Chase CEO James Dimon and while CEO Kenneth Lewis were saying that they were having successful months, in fact, they were losing lots of money. In February, it had been seen that the big banks were all but insolvent, and they actually were insolvent, that is Citibank and B of A. And that's why this toxic asset buyout was moved forward very quickly. The alternative was to do what was done in Sweden or was done in Great Britain, which was to nationalize in a way its pre-privatization and put these banks in FDIC receivership. But they weren't going to do that. Timothy Geithner made it clear that his priority isn't to cleanse banking sector, which is what would have been done, what was done in Sweden and in Great Britain, where the government comes in, nationalizes the banks, cleans them up, and then sells them off in the private market. Well, these are the biggest banks in the U.S., and the U.S. government is not intending to take them over in any way, shape, or form. So what is Geithner doing? Making them profitable, buying off their bad assets. In other words, the banks accumulate all these bad debts. In the meantime, the executives make lots of billions of dollars. And then the government says, okay, let the taxpayers pick up the check. Well, this isn't this is not working. There's no mask on this for anyone who has open eyes. The mask is to the American middle class. The mask is to the people who support Barack Obama blindly, saying, give him a chance. Well, his chance is only for Wall Street. Please wake up.
Maya, this is how this financial pundit for the rulers themselves, has put it. Describing this naked profiteering, he said, this was possibly the most nakedly self-serving BS the big bank COOs have ever offered. It was understood that the big banks are all insolvent, and certainly Citibank and Bank of America. The consensus among the cognoscenti was tending to a proper recapitalization. Wipe out the shareholders, force the losses onto the creditors via debt-for-equity swaps. Call it nationalization, call it pre-privatization, call it FDIC receivership. The losses had to be recognized, and by those to whom they properly belong, investors across the capital structure. But no one wanted to do this. Not Congress, not Obama's administration, and Geithner made clear his priority isn't a cleansed banking sector, it's a privately controlled one. The banks are being subsidized in a ridiculous scheme, a toxic asset transfer, he says, that is going to further deepen the crisis of U.S. capital on a scale that we have not even begun to imagine. And he continues this in another piece called Anatomy of a Giveaway, or Why the Stock Soared Today. The best 10-day gain since 1938 should leave no doubt what Geithner's bank rescue plan represents, a mammoth taxpayer giveaway to the banker investors, a tutorial for those not quite clear about the mechanics of the giveaway, and he proceeds to spell this out in the article, why stocks soared today, because they are being handed over first billions and ultimately trillions of dollars in the face of their destruction of the viability of the fictive economy capital in these past 18 months.
And Ralph, as I mentioned before, this is not deluding the smartest economists. As Rubini noted, he's a professor at NYU Stern School of Business and chairman of the consulting firm Rubini Global Economics. And he had predicted the crash, as many people, as all Marxists have been predicting, let us note. He said in an interview with Bloomberg Television in London, quote, we'll have some major banks going belly up that will be need to be taken over. The plan of Geithner to remove the toxic debt from the financial companies won't be enough for insolvent banks. Note, it won't be enough. The so-called stress tests that Barack Obama refers to, where they do stress tests on banks to determine how much more capital each will be needed, isn't enough. He predicts that the loan and security losses in the U.S. will reach $3.6 trillion and that the stress test will reveal that some banks need to be taken over and have their good and bad assets separated before being sold to the private sector. In other words, further consolidation. Further consolidation. He says some banks are going to have to be nationalized. It's a bumpy road ahead of us. A bumpy road. Now, this is the word of a well-known economist, a professor at NYU Stern School of Business. It's the word from Paul Krugman. It's the word from many significant economists.
Robert Reich
throughout the sector. Let's look briefly, before Ralph continues, at the jobless rolls. We had Wall Street going up. And what you saw on CNN and the other news stations is everyone was wondering, how could Wall Street be going up, but the unemployment figures are also going up. In other words, no jobs are being created. And as Ralph noted, Wall Street was going up because the bank stocks were going up. The bank stocks were rising up to their original levels because the government is saying, we're going to prop up these banks. We're not going to let them fail. We're going to pour in taxpayer money, or we're going to create new dollars and create inflation, which will affect you and me. We are going to do this in order to preserve the private standing and the wealth of the ruling rich. New claims for unemployment benefits rose to a seasonally adjusted 652,000, up from 644,000 the week before. And the government said that the economy shrank at 6.3% annual clip in the fourth quarter. So that's faster than a previous estimate. unemployment keeps going up. It now stands at 5.6 million, and there's an additional 1.5 million people who are collecting the extended unemployment benefits, and there are many more millions who have given up looking, so they don't even appear on the rolls. Ralph, to conclude.
The question of the consequences for the working class is a subject that we will deal with in great detail. Just let me say this. The captains of capital themselves are now in panic. The principal spokesperson for the European Union called what is taking place in the United States the collective road to hell. And the Chinese central banker has stated that the U.S. dollar must be replaced as a global reserve currency. Zhou Xiaochuan, head of the Chinese central bank, called for the immediate replacement of the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency. His comments, published in both Chinese and English on the central bank's website, represent a stepping up of economic tensions as the global financial and economic crisis deepens. The price of maintaining this regime is so high, not only for users but also for issues of reserve currencies, Zhou said. The frequency, increasing intensity of the financial crises that are billowing and growing following the collapse of the Bretton Woods system means that the cost of this system, the dollar reserve system, to the world has far exceeded any benefit. The sharpness of the speech was startling. The impact of the statements is to raise questions as to the stability of the U.S. dollar. The Chinese authorities hold $2 trillion in foreign reserves, two-thirds of which are placed in U.S. assets. Any crisis of confidence in the U.S. dollar threatens the entire value of Chinese holdings. What's happening now, brothers and sisters, is that from China to Japan to Europe itself, the crisis has now taken on a magnitude that their own economies are in jeopardy of collapsing around them. They're going to abandon the dollar. They're going to jettison the deficit finance boondoggle that makes the dollar worthless, worth what the German mark was in the Great Depression when it was being carried around in wheelbarrows to buy a loaf of bread. We will continue with the magnitude of this crisis and this mad rush to total destabilization as they profiteer wildly in their death throes, capitalism in absolute, total, abysmal, reconcilable only with bankers, collapse around our ears and theirs.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama and the Finance Capitalist on the Same Page, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell, that's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week. Tatam ta, chinda paro, tatam ta. Filon dok mi wala ngane, mandali.